circadian rhythms, light cycles, metabolic rhythms, and temperature fluctuations. If I can master those, I should be getting some pretty good sleep.
Hacking Age, the longevity podcast with Natalia Fischer and Dr. Felix Bertram.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to a new episode of Hacking Age, the longevity podcast, where once a week we discuss the things we can do ourselves to ensure a long and healthy life. I'm Natalia Fischer, an editor at Funke, and sitting across from me is Dr. Felix Bertram. Hi, Felix. Great to have you here.
Hi, Natalia.
In our last episode, you told us about a test you took that measured your biological age, and you discovered that you were actually 25 years older than your chronological age. You've since reversed that, at least by 5 years, and exactly how you managed to pull that off is what we discuss here on this podcast. You already mentioned that sleep plays a pivotal role, and that's what we want to talk about today. Sleep isn't usually the first thing that comes to mind when people think of a healthy lifestyle. They usually think of exercise or nutrition. Why is sleep so vital for our health?
Well, sleep is a fascinating phenomenon. If we conduct a thought experiment and go back to the Stone Age to ask what purpose sleep serves from an evolutionary biology perspective, it initially seems completely pointless. Evolutionarily, we are destined to reproduce, protect our children and families, and provide food, to put it simply. And we can do none of those things while sleeping. In fact, we are defenseless. We can easily be attacked by wild animals or other humans. We obviously don't reproduce, we don't hunt, we don't gather food, and we aren't productive in any other way. So the big question is, why is sleep important at all? But since we must sleep, we have to assume it has an absolute purpose. Today we know that going without sleep isn't an act of heroism. It is absolutely essential.
If we sleep too little, it can even lead to certain diseases, right?
Yes. If I can briefly explain a mechanism that is very important for understanding longevity, we have a sensor that controls energy and nutrition. It's the so-called mTOR switch, lowercase m, capital TOR. For anyone who wants to Google it, think of it like a dimmer switch for a light. During the day, our mTOR switch is dimmed up. It's there for growth. We eat, we train, muscles grow, we are present, and the switch is turned on. At night, it regulates itself down, and for good reason. It sets autophagy in motion. Autophagy is our internal cleanup mechanism. It's also activated when we fast or are in a calorie deficit. This autophagy cleans up. It disposes of sick, harmful, and old cells. We essentially regenerate overnight, refilling the tank and cleansing our organism. That's why sleep is so extremely important.
How many hours should it be per night? Is it those 8 hours we always hear about, or is it individual?
It's a bit individual, but it shouldn't be under 6. 7 to 9 hours is the general guideline to keep in mind. But there's another important point. It's not just about the time, but the sleep quality. Sleep follows a specific architecture. Deep sleep, REM sleep, light sleep. We wake up briefly in between without even noticing. These cycles say a lot about the quality. We need sufficient deep sleep and REM sleep. That's why it's not just about time in bed. Otherwise, one could argue that alcohol or sleeping pills sedate us for 10 hours and that's great. But that's wrong. The sleep quality then is poor. Duration and quality are equally important.
Everyone has a bad night occasionally. When does it become bad sleep that makes you sick or becomes problematic?
They say if a sleep disorder occurs 3 times a week, it's problematic. What defines a sleep disorder? There are 3 criteria. First, latency, how long it takes to fall asleep. It shouldn't exceed 30 minutes. Second, waking up during the night for more than 30 minutes. Waking up briefly to use the bathroom and falling right back asleep is fine. Third, waking up too early. For example, waking up at 4 a.m. and being unable to fall back asleep. If one of these happens 3 times a week, it's a sign of a disorder and should be investigated.
Actually, a huge portion of the population is affected. According to the Robert Koch Institute, 25% of adults suffer from sleep disorders. You've had this experience yourself. Why was your sleep so bad back then?
I'm an entrepreneur. I have a company with 150 employees plus two other businesses. It was a phase with many challenges. There's a lot of pressure, paying 150 salaries, being responsible for 150 people. But many people who aren't entrepreneurs have stress too. I don't want to rank it. My personal experience was that I simply couldn't switch off anymore. I took the stress home, my thoughts were racing, and I couldn't fall asleep. This led to me making poor decisions the next day. I wasn't a good boss anymore because I lacked the capacity due to sleep deprivation. I tried to take shortcuts. I started drinking a little beer in the evening to relax. Many people do that, one or two beers, a glass or two of wine, but the little beer turned into more beers and eventually sleeping pills. I spiraled downwards.
Many people use alcohol or pills to counter this. Why did you feel it helped initially?
Because it does help. That's the catch. Alcohol or pills let you fall asleep wonderfully and you get your 6 to 8 hours, but you aren't rested the next morning. Many people feel foggy-brained, not really present or sharp. Alcohol leads to a mini hangover, even in small amounts. It's not the same feeling as naturally cycling through all sleep phases. It's a deceptive trap.
When did you realize that?
At the latest, when I took the test, I realized I was damaging my body and began analyzing things. I went to a sleep lab and started measuring my sleep. I saw that even two or three beers in the evening led to restless sleep. You fall asleep easily, but the sleep architecture is disrupted. You can see it in the heart rate. It should rest at night. Like with exercise, we apply stress during the day, but at night, recovery is essential. Otherwise, it's not sustainable. My heart rate was high and my heart rate variability was very low. I wasn't truly rested. I didn't notice it at first, but the test made it clear I was on the wrong path.
How did you approach it? Did you stop everything immediately or follow a plan?
As a doctor, I thought I knew best. I was on vacation when I got the results and decided to stop taking sleeping pills abruptly. I had worked my way up to 3 pills. One would work until 2 a.m., then I'd take another, and so on. I stopped completely and experienced severe withdrawal symptoms for 2 weeks. Later, I read that withdrawal from sleeping pills can be almost worse than heroin withdrawal. I would not recommend doing this alone. It should be done under medical supervision and tapered gradually.
How long did it take until the withdrawal symptoms disappeared?
I stopped completely and haven't taken them since. The first 2 weeks were very intense. I barely slept. It took about a year for my sleep to stabilize fully. Until a few months ago, it was still somewhat inconsistent. After 2 to 3 weeks, I also stopped drinking alcohol, which was surprisingly easier compared to quitting sleeping pills. Sleeping pills, specifically Z substances like benzodiazepines or zolpidem, can be effective and may be appropriate in acute crises, such as bereavement or separation, for a short period of 1 or 2 weeks. But they are not a long-term solution. They are highly addictive, and tolerance develops quickly. One pill becomes two, and so on. They should never be taken independently or long-term.
You managed to stop and developed what you call a new sleep hygiene. You replaced harmful routines with helpful ones. What exactly did you change?
There are many adjustments one can make, none involving medication. Light plays a major role. Our bodies follow rhythms. In the evening, we should dim the lights, especially overhead lighting, which simulates sunlight. Our eyes signal that it's still daytime. Historically, humans followed natural light cycles, and that still makes sense today. In the morning, we should expose ourselves to light immediately, ideally by going outside. If that's not possible, opening curtains or using a daylight lamp can help activate the circadian rhythm.
What about blue light from screens?
Regarding blue light from screens, the latest findings suggest that the content matters more than the light itself. Stimulating content, emails, social media, or exciting videos, activates the nervous system. Calm content such as reading or listening to an audiobook is less problematic. Ideally, one should begin winding down about 3 hours before bedtime, eat the last meal 2 to 3 hours beforehand, and engage in relaxing activities. The sleep environment is also important. Darkness, quietness, and temperature. The body needs to cool down at night in order to fall asleep and stay asleep. A room temperature of around 18 to 19 degrees Celsius is ideal. Interestingly, heat exposure, such as a sauna, hot bath, or hot shower, can support sleep. It triggers a cooling response afterward, which promotes falling asleep. Another important tip is to only go to bed when you are truly tired. Otherwise, you may begin to associate the bed with wakefulness and stress, which is counterproductive.
You mentioned eating and drinking. No late coffee, no heavy meals. Any other tips?
Regarding nutrition, avoid heavy meals, alcohol, and caffeine late in the day. Caffeine can take 6 to 7 hours to be metabolized. Improving sleep takes time. Sleep is not something we can force. We must let go. That is not easy in a performance-driven society. It took me about a year to fully stabilize my sleep. After 6 months, it was about 70 to 80% improved. After a year, around 90 to 100%. If there is no improvement after several months, medical evaluation is advisable. Conditions such as sleep apnea, breathing interruptions during sleep, or restless leg syndrome are relatively common and should be assessed by a doctor.
What about supplements like melatonin, valerian, or hops?
Regarding supplements, many are promoted on social media, such as melatonin, valerian, and hops. The evidence is limited. Melatonin is a hormone and should be used cautiously, primarily for short-term situations like jet lag. Glycine and magnesium may be helpful. Glycine, an amino acid, can have a calming effect on the nervous system. I personally take both glycine and magnesium.
Perfect. Thank you for the insights.
Three longevity tips from Dr. Felix Bertram.
Felix, what are your three longevity tips for good sleep?
Can I make it four? Maintain a consistent time rhythm, a light rhythm, a metabolic rhythm, and a temperature rhythm. If you manage these, you should achieve good sleep. More importantly, these rhythms give your body a reliable structure it can adapt to over time. Sleep is not something you can force. It is something you prepare for. By consistently aligning your daily routine with these natural rhythms, you allow your body to recognize when it is time to be active and when it is time to recover. The more stable and predictable these signals are, the easier it becomes to fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up feeling truly restored.
That is what we wish for our listeners as well. Thank you, Felix, for your tips and your openness.
Thank you.
We will be back next week to discuss the fascinating topic of nutrition. Throughout this podcast, we aim to learn more about what we can do for a long and healthy life. Feel free to subscribe or leave us a review. If you have questions or comments, please write to us at längerleben.funkemedien.de. Hear you next week.
Podcast von Funke.